Okay, welcome to ITE Module 12, Part 3, would you believe? Last week we got very close to the end of this module. So because we have a super duper extraordinaire quick reviewer, I'm going to hand over to Kerry just to finish the last little bit, which was on upgrading the operating systems. We'll finish that and we'll stop recording and then we'll carry on to the next module. So it's over to him.
Actually, what we will do is we will not stop recording because the Mac takes so long to encode. I'll just splice it up. It's going to be easier because otherwise we'll be stuck recording. Upgrading operating systems. I assume what they're essentially telling you is that sometimes service packs and upgrades come out for operating systems and you need to apply them. There are a number of ways you can get these updates and service packs. Some of them are from the vendor, some of them are from Windows Update, and some of them you can get on CD from certain places as well. You should have a full system backup before applying any service packs or upgrades, because if it breaks, you keep both pieces and it's your own silly fault. You have backups anyway, don't you? So, when you apply a service pack, make sure you have your backup, apply the service pack, then make sure that your system behaves as it should. If the operating system has an option such as System Restore, you can uninstall a service pack if it causes problems, and be aware that if you do get a service pack for an operating system, there could be problems with the service pack. There's no reason why all the bugs have been squashed before it got to you. If you're upgrading between multiple operating systems, there are documentation that will tell you what you can upgrade from to. Microsoft's website will tell you that you can upgrade from Windows 2000 to Windows XP, or Windows 98 to Windows 2000, or Windows 98 to Windows XP. So look up the manufacturer's website on what you can and can't upgrade to and from. And the same goes for Linux. I think that's essentially what that section says. If there's anything else I've missed, feel free.
Pretty much. Maybe if we just see if anyone's got any questions on that before we move on. Well, I have some questions for you. Okay, we're going to do a quick quiz. So if you can all have your chat windows open, we will go on with the module quiz for module 12. And thanks, Kerry, for that nice quick summing up. That's good. Okay, so if we're all ready, question one, how many active partitions can a hard drive have? Is it A, 1, 2, sorry, B, 2, C, 4, or D, 8?
And the correct answer, because there's not that many people on, is 1.
I wonder why we're getting any answers there. Okay, that's good. Yeah, well, yes, we did. 3. Okay, question 2. Which two file systems can be used by Windows XP? Is it A, DOS, B, EXT3, C, FAT32, D, HPFS, E, NTFS, or F, Vista? Go now. And I had one of my local students here saying, yep, so it must be true. It is. Okay, and
yes, I've done some jiggery pokery to my windows, haven't I?
Yeah, FAT32 and NTFS.
Probably the point to make here, Elise, and I agree with you, if you do have the EXT3 driver installed, that's all well and good. It does have some limitations. When we do these courses, we are talking about the Microsoft recommended and sanctioned upgrades to your system, not all of the extra bits that you got from third parties that you and Will and Craig fell jammed on and decided whether it would fall over sideways. So, yeah, NTFS and FAT32.
Yep.
Okay, next one. How can the last known good configuration option be accessed? Is it A, press the F8 key to access the advanced boot options, B, click Start All Programs System Tools Restore, C, click Start All Programs Accessories System Tools Backup, or D, press the Delete key to access the Recovery Console? Go now. I can't trick anybody today. That was correct.
This is probably worth, I was probably going to mention that when you actually press the F8, you actually press the F8 key once the logo screen appears, and on most regular machines, that's after the BIOS has gone beep, if that functionality has been turned on. It's actually 2 seconds after it goes beep, you press the F8 key. Because believe it or not, one of the biggest questions I get asked when I tell people to boot into safe mode is, so when do I press that F8 key? Am I pressing it yet, or I'm at a login screen now, and you go, well, you're about 10 seconds too late. But, I mean, anybody who's done it will know exactly when that key has to be pressed.
Okay, next question was, a new graphics card is installed in a computer. When the computer is powered on, the default drivers are loaded, but some of the applications don't work properly. What should you do to improve the graphics card performance? Is it A, check the Microsoft website, try and say that again, to find the latest drivers? Is it B, check the website of the manufacturer for the latest drivers? Or C, configure the application to run correctly with the new graphics card? Or D, configure the graphics card settings correctly in the start menu? Go now.
That's actually an interesting question, because I would actually say that C is
also
correct.
Try D first, then go for B.
Well, I'd also say that you do need to configure the application to work with the graphics card, because a lot of applications have resolution settings and stuff, especially games.
I would actually go D first, then if I couldn't get D to work, then I'd go to B, and then I'd go to C.
Which one was D?
I'm not so sure about the start menu, but I would just right-click on the desktop and go and check to see if the Windows could drive the card first, and if it couldn't, then I'd look for drivers, and then if I could, you know, do it that way.
I'm going to technically disagree with you there, because one of the problems I've had, and Chris will back me up on this one, except he's not on voicey, but he's local. Sometimes the drivers you get off Windows Update are complete crud, and they don't work, and you just have to go and get the manufacturer's drivers anyway, because the whole thing went pear-shaped and fell over. And we had some wireless dongles, and if you let them install the driver from Windows Update, it'll show up with no question marks or anything, but it will completely fail to connect to anything. And then when you actually go and get the manufacturer's driver from Open Networks, it all goes like a mad thing. So beware of the default drivers on Windows Update. Sometimes they work an absolute charm, and sometimes they don't.
Oh, look, I'll agree, yeah.
Okay, but the Cisco answer you want for your exams is check the website of the manufacturer for the latest drivers. So we'll just give you that heads up. We always have to give them exactly what they want. Okay, that's if we want to pass. Okay, the next question, which is the default Windows update setting? Is it A, automatically download recommended updates for my computer and install them? B, download updates for me and let me choose when to install them? C, notify me but don't automatically download or install them? Or D, turn off automatic update? Go now.
I think it's A.
No,
I always have to keep going in to turn it off, so it must be A, I don't know.
It is A, automatically download.
Yeah. Yeah, automatically download and install, I think. I think it's definitely automatically download. It may also be automatically installed.
But the funny thing is, that's assuming that you've turned automatic updates on to begin with. If you don't turn automatic updates on, it'll just pop a balloon up going, keep your computer up to date, and it won't download anything. So technically the answer is actually do not download and install, because the automatic updates isn't enabled by default. Norton Internet Security will turn it on. And a few other security packages.
Kerry, I think, and I will stand corrected on this, I have a feeling I saw it in one of my recent installs of Windows near the end of the installation as an option to turn on there, and most people probably go click, 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 next, 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 because I have a feeling that's where the radio button is set to switch it on.
Yeah,
which is
in
why
the
you might find
experience.
A lot of Is it?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, and that's why you'll probably find it by default turned on, because by the time you get your desktop and everything running, it's been left selected as they've gone next, next, next through the installation.
And I've just been corrected here informed that that's actually become a default as part of Service Pack 2. If you don't have Service Pack 2 or later slipstream into your Windows install, it won't come up in the out-of-box experience. Yeah, well, it's, you know, it all depends on which version you've got.
Depends on when you last install Windows, I suppose, doesn't it?
So the Cisco answer is correct. It's automatically download and install, and if you don't override it, that is certainly the correct answer. But on older copies of Windows, it was actually off by default, and it was definitely off. But
that's going to trick a few people, isn't it?
Well, it's not hard to do, is it, because of the fact that they changed it when the Service Pack 2 came out. And God only knows what they're going to do with it in 3 if you get a Windows bundle with 3, I suppose.
I haven't been game enough to slipstream 3 into an installation of Windows yet. It's on my to-do list, though. Just for people who don't know, the slipstreaming a service pack means that you actually take the original install image and you integrate the service pack into the install image, and then you burn another CD so that the service pack and all of the updates that it contains are already embedded into Windows, and you've been able to slipstream service packs in for quite a while. The term slipstream refers to the area of no disturbance behind a fast-moving vehicle. So, for example, if you're riding along in the slipstream of something, you're actually riding along in the still air that's behind it, because it's already displaced the air via its movement, which is why they call it slipstreaming.
The things we learn.
Things we're learning, Cathy, hey? Isn't it good?
Okay, next question. Which Windows XP function allows a system to roll back to a previous state? Is it A, automatic update? Is it B, NT backup? Is it C, restore point? Or is it D, scan reg?
The technical name for that is actually system restore, not restore.
System point. Restore, not restore point. Yes, indeed.
Mm.
You're using a restore point to allow system restore to do its job.
That's exactly right.
And there's another answer I could have given that Kerry wouldn't like, because we're supposed to keep things by the book.
You were saying your cloned hard drive that you're very fond of.
Yes, get it back from the Linux machine.
Yeah, okay, what Alyssa's got is she's actually got a copy of her system, and she's got a Linux partition, and she actually does a block copy of the old copy back over the top when the new one inevitably goes bad. And that's a thing known as system imaging, and Microsoft never used to support it, but they kind of do now because they had no choice, because everybody was using Norton Ghost and Drive Image and all sorts of other third-party things. Because they didn't want to install 300 copies of Windows. They just installed one copy and then imaged it onto 300 computers.
So they sort of now came around anyway, didn't they?
They did.
Okay, so it was mentioning the whole last known good creates a restore point loop gotcha trap thing.
Yeah, it does actually, and you can mention that if you want. That is probably definitely worth mentioning.
If you choose to start from the last known good, and for even if you restore from a restore point, a restore point is created before you restore. So if you then try and do a last known good, you will be restoring to the point before you just tried to restore, therefore you'll be restoring back to a broken state.
Okay, so what she's saying is that when you actually try to restore to a previous point, or you boot last known good, a restore point of the broken configuration is created. And if you restore to the most recent restore point, you will actually get the broken configuration.
Yep, it's making sense.
And you can look that up on windowssecrets.com. We've actually subscribed to Windows Secrets, which I think is a very good newsletter. You give them a little donation each year and they send you 12 months worth of newsletters, but there is a free version of the newsletter you can get, and I think that gotcha might have been covered in one of the free ones, I hope.
I believe it was, yeah.
You just got to be aware of it, that when you actually run System Restore, it actually creates a restore point of your current configuration. And if you actually restore to the most recent restore point, which is the one it just created, you'll actually be back to your broken state. That's what they're trying to say. As a safety thing, System Restore actually creates a restore point.
Very good point. Well done, Gemma.
Very good restore point, Geraldine.
Exactly.
Put my Zippo away, you're on fire there.
Okay,